world famous Phil Henry Show, and welcome to the program tonight. We got Dave Oliva in the wings right now to talk about this so-called spying controversy. This is so-called because, you know, what I was saying on the show yesterday kind of got echoed on the news today, especially by people, I guess, that were speaking on behalf of the administration. But if it was Bush that was president, I'd say the same thing, which is, you know.
Well, that excuse, Phil, I don't think it's very adult.
Yeah, a lot of little kid would say that.
Well, hold on for a minute. The excuse, if you want to call it that, it's not an excuse at all. I said, this is the world of espionage. This is what happens. Countries spy on each other. Now, I listen to as much television, talk television, news television, as I can stomach. And that's about a half an hour's worth. And then I can feel the vomit beginning to rise in the back of my throat. And I have to run to the bathroom, and just as I hit the toilet, it's coming through my nose and my mouth.
God, man!
What are you trying to do?
I'm just telling you. When I'm watching, it could be CNN, MSNBC, Fox, I got about a half an hour, and then the puke begins to just... You know? And I'm listening to some real brain surgeon that they had on one of the channels, and she's weighing in with the following opinion. She's saying... Well, among the many human rights abuses of the Obama administration, I'm thinking you're saying that with a straight face too. You know, if Obama's abusing human rights, then every president since Roosevelt has, and that's fine. And I guess it's time to talk about that in the middle of a war on terror. Let's talk about our rights, boy. If there's a country full of people that got you want to know what I think? I think we got too many rights.
I beg your pardon. Say that again, and say it slowly.
Yeah, this I gotta hear.
Oh, you want to hear it again?
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
We have too many rights in America.
Holy Jesus. You did it. You finally got it said.
No. What do you mean finally got it said?
You want to take away the rights of everybody? Wow.
No, I didn't say that, did I? What I'm actually saying, more than taking away our rights, I think if ever there was a country of people that ought to be reminded of the rights they have... ought to be reminded of what a tenuous and frightful job it is holding on to the society that we have and the country that we have. I'm telling you, this guy, Snowden, is nothing more than a guy... What are you looking at, Margaret?
You know, Phil, when you start talking about Snowden, you don't understand. He is a man of principle. Thank God. Thank God. If you believe in God. I don't believe in God, but I'm saying thank God for the purposes of those who do believe in God. And I'm saying thank God for this man, Eric Snowden. And you want to know something? I'll say something that will disgust you, okay? Are you ready? Because I know how juvenile you guys are.
Go ahead.
If I were younger, I would take that boy to...
You'd take him into a bedroom, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
Good thing. That's if he says yes to you.
Oh, let me tell you something, my fine feathered friend. No man alive... When I was in my young... No man alive... Well, you got a...
Margaret, take it easy. No one's slamming your looks. You know...
When I was younger, no man alive said no to this.
Okay, thank you very much.
God stood up... For the purposes of the people at home, she stood up and pointed to her butt.
You're a liar.
Hey, watch it!
Well, don't let him lie.
Come on, bud.
Might as well have.
What do you mean, I might as well have?
Well, when you said no man alive could say no to this... What are you talking about?
All right, I'll do it.
Now she is standing up and pointing to her ass, folks.
That's right.
All right, so, okay, and all of that is to say what? Eric Snowden, he guns your engine because he's a man of principle. That's fine. Yeah, that's great. You know, that's where we are now. We're celebrating lawbreakers. We're celebrating guys that compromise the security of the country. And what? If you happen to be a right-winger, he's your favorite guy. You know, right-wingers, I always thought, were like law and order people. But not when it comes to a guy like that. They think that's just fantastic. Go ahead, man. Go out there and spill your guts.
Mr. Allen, you know, you can't keep doing this, man, because people don't stop thinking you are some kind of a political host and everything.
Yeah, they're going to think you're Mike Malloy or something.
They ain't going to think I'm Mike Malloy. Are you nuts? I'm giving a little bit of an opinion. We're going to have Dave Oliva on tonight here in the first hour. We had him on last night. And he gave us a small read, a small taste on the entire, you know, wiretapping, phone hacking thing that's happening. And the new headline is, amid new storm in U.S.-Europe relationship, a call for talks on spying. So they want to have some kind of a summit or a or a sit down or a powwow.
What's a powwow?
That's like Indian.
It's something that Indians did, yes. I'll do it, bud. It's something that Native Americans / Indians did.
What's that?
Well, when they had a powwow, they sat.
Why they call it powwow, though?
Well, they called it a powwow because that's when you sat and you talked over the problems if you were an Indian. Now, the reason why it was called a powwow, it's Native American language, isn't it, Phil?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, don't let me twist in the breeze.
You're the one that wanted to take over the conversation.
Robert, it's Native American for discussion. It means powwow.
But or it could be other things are being said, like powwow, wow, you know?
Yeah, sure, that's it.
Woo!
Well, I mean, it sounds makes about as much sense.
As what? As what I'm saying? What I'm saying makes perfect sense. It's a Native American word. Powwow is when they sat down.
What about the peace pipe?
Yes, that's when they smoked the peace pipe, right?
I don't know. The peace pipe, I thought, was something you smoked between warring tribes. You know, if there was you sat down and smoked the peace pipe to have peace.
Yes, at a powwow.
Is a powwow? Oh, okay.
Oh, will you forget it? What's a powwow? Anyway, so there's going to be a powwow. Maybe it's German. Maybe Angela Merkel knows the definition of it.
German?
I'm joking. So anyway, amid new storm in U.S. Europe relationship, a call for talks on spying. And this whole thing about busting in on people's phones and you know, just exactly who's here and what was being said, and I was in the bathtub, and how dare you, and I was talking to Dave Olivo on the line with us here from Monterey Park, California. Dave, again, thank you for being with us last night. We want to hold you on tonight in our first hour in case people missed your comments. Now, let's talk about this. I know that you are an aspiring Los Angeles police officer, and we're going to go to a break here in a moment, but let me ask you about the mechanics of eavesdropping. Just as a cop, and if there's a operation that has been ordered to wiretap or to eavesdrop, you know, how serious does it have to be? How many people are involved, et cetera?
Well, first of all, Ms. Riley, thank you for having me on your program.
You're welcome.
You know, it depends on who the target is. It also depends on if it's a federal order. Is this a local beef? You know, in police parlance, that's what we call any kind of, you know, a law that has been broken. We'll say it's a beef, you know. And so is it a local beef? Is it locally grown? Not locally grown beef, but...
locally grown beef? Why'd you say that?
I got confused. I'm thinking about steaks, and I shouldn't say...
Yeah, a local beef, meaning a local complaint.
Yeah, local complaint. If it's federally grown, there's no grown beef. I'm sorry. I'm thinking about... I've been in school all day. I'm thinking about food.
No, locally grown beef would be right.
No, it isn't right. No, it's not.
Not locally grown.
It's not grown at all.
No, I'm not talking about locally grown.
We're not talking about beef at all. Hold on for a minute. Are we? Would you guys not butt in?
Well, I didn't butt in. I corrected him.
All right, Margaret, yes, you did. You understand, you guys? It's not locally grown beef. He's talking about a beef as in police talk.
Oh, yeah, okay. Dad, well, what's locally grown?
That's when you're buying steaks. We're going to be back here on the Phil Henry Show amid new storm and U.S.-Europe relationship, a call for talks on spying. Let's see, folks. This ought to be really interesting. Let's see if at all in the forthcoming quarter hour we get anywhere near talking about this particular topic. Let's find out if that indeed is going to be the case here on a world-famous Phil Henry Show. 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, and online at philhenryshow.com, where you get a backstage pass, watch our live streaming video of the show, as well as so many other wonderful things. It's the Phil Henry Show, back in a moment here. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Unless my close personal friend Matt back in D.C. is kidding me, he said, and this is straight from Washington, D.C., that the Washington Redskins, there is a good chance, I don't know if the name will be changed to this, but there's a very good chance that in the running and high up on the list of name change candidates is the Washington Bravehearts. Now, I asked him if he was kidding. He said no, that Dan Snyder's neighbor had registered it, and that Redskin fans are weighing in already. They're upset, which I don't doubt, because football fans are great people, but as far as being en masse, you know, the hive mind of the football fan is what you have to consider, just like you have to consider the hive mind of the internet, and that is the combined mind, you know?
Well, if you're talking about the combined mind of football fans, that's not anything...
Is it not? Is it dumb?
Dumb.
Woo!
Well, it ain't too bright. So naturally, when sports fans have got nothing, man, they don't care about social justice or anything like that. However, nonetheless, and that having been said, and forthwith, and like that, Bravehearts. So let's get on the line with us, hanging on, Dave Oliva from Monterey Park, an aspiring law enforcement officer, as well as a student of criminal justice and law enforcement. We are talking about the wiretapping of, or I should say the phone tapping, the phone hacking, because it's not really a tap, Dave, is it?
Well, no, it's not, and that's the thing, you have to remember that phone tap, as was done in the old days by the police, is far different than hacking into a wireless signal, which poses less risk, you know, for the officer who is, who's doing the hacking, because in the old days, if you wanted to tap into a phone, you know, and you still have to, get a tap on any landline that you want to listen to.
And this is, I guess, primarily the hacking of cell phones, right, Margaret?
That's my understanding, and I think that you made a very good point, Phil, when you said that if you're a world leader, why do you have a cell phone?
Well, you know, I heard that comment too, Mr. Turner. I think the only other thing I would say about that, if you are a world leader and you get a call... Or let's say you're a world leader and you're out at a meeting, you know, with whatever. I mean, you're meeting with a lot of different people in there, and then a decision has to be made, and they want to tell you about it. You know, they got to be able to call you. That's the only thing that I would say in favor of having a cell phone.
Yeah, but they got. What are you talking about? I mean, they've got people with them that you can call any one of those guys.
Well, I mean, yeah, you could, but if it's the time, see, you know, it doesn't make no sense. You might as well just call, like, all the time wasted calling Bush at 9/11, and he's got to stop. He's reading the kids a goat story, and it made him look bad, you know, when he stopped, and, like, the people are going, hey, Mr. President, you know, some towelheads, they didn't say towelhead, but some people flew a plane in. And
all right, what are you saying? Because I want to get to the point of this.
I'm just saying, if he'd had a phone, and he would have, you know, excuse me, kids, let me take this call. And
oh, yeah, sure. That's, excuse me, kids, I just noticed my cell phone.
Well, I mean, what's so funny about that?
Are you kidding me or something, man? The president's not going to take a call. Don't look dignified and everything.
Well, that doesn't make any difference, man. Just, he don't have no time to do that.
What do you mean he doesn't have any time? I mean, if what Dave's saying is true, of course he'd have time. President can answer a cell phone as easy as anybody else. You know? But the fact of the matter is, it's not necessary. You've got a million people there. You've got guys, Secret Service. You've got a chief of staff. You've got all these cats that are there with you who can take your calls and tell you, Mr. President, this, that, something else. What do you mean wasted time?
Well, I think Dave's making a good point. At 9/11, when Bush was reading the goat story to the children, someone came up and whispered, and it looks extremely, I'm sure it's very nerve-wracking. You see someone say, hey, Mr. President, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And everyone's on edge.
No. Nobody was on edge. Nobody was on edge. I stand by my original assessment. I don't understand why these people need to have cell phones. I mean, if you need to get a phone call, if you need to be talking to the chief of staff, I get it. If there's someone like your wife, but as president of the United States, I don't see that you have. I don't think it's possible. You know.
Why do you say that?
I just don't. If you're president, I don't think it's possible for you. I don't think it's advisable for you to be taking phone calls on a cell phone. I just don't think you should do that. And I think that if they had any brains in their heads, which half the time these guys, you wonder how the hell they got out of how they got out of the cradle, half of them, they would say, now that you're president, I'm sorry, sir, but all of your phone calls are going to be handled by the rest of us. And if there's something that you need to weigh in on, you know.
Well, I mean, What are you going to do? With flashcards or something like that?
Yeah, flashcards. That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, how are they going to do, Miss Henry?
What do you mean, flashcards?
Well, how is he going to communicate?
Yeah, see, that's the only thing, you know.
Well, you just tell him. I mean, if the guy calls up and he says, I need to tell the president that the New York got attacked, you know, I mean...
So he's going to hear that from some schlub in a blue suit. No, I don't think so.
You know, Mr. Henry, you can't hear that kind of news from, like Miss Gray said, like a
schlub.
Yeah, from some schlub. Whatever that is.
What do you mean, some schlub in a blue suit? He's hearing it from the Secret Service, from the Chief of Staff, or something like that. Let's move on. All right, as long as we're talking about the security risks of people, you know, hacking, foreign governments hacking into to the phone, because personally, here's my concern. I could give a crap whether Angela Merkel's getting her phone hacked into.
Yeah, it's totally...
Well, what does that mean?
It means it's exactly what I said. I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn who... I do care if the President of the United States is getting his phone hacked into.
Well, you know, that's exactly the point, Mr. Enright. And I think you hit the nail right on the head there. I don't, you know, I'm the same way. I don't care what they do. And, you know, they can all, I mean, I love my country. It's my country, you know, and they can all go straight down to hell, you know. But here's the thing. If Obama gets his phone hacked, there's going to be the possibility that some things are compromised from the standpoint of, you know, sexuality or something. I don't know what it would be.
Now, you said this last night, and you were talking about him ordering escorts, the most asinine thing I ever heard.
Well, okay, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if Obama is talking to, you know, his wife, and he's going, yeah, you know, why don't you, you know, like I shouldn't say, but I mean, he's the president, but, you know, why don't you get the blue panties out tonight, you know? Yeah, all right, you know, like that.
You know, I don't know what you guys think is going on these cell phone conversations.
What do you think is going on? And you talk about what? Everybody's not attacking us.
The guy's talking business, okay? He's talking business, whether it's something like a congressional... I don't know what he's talking about.
Right there, Mr. You don't know what he's talking about.
Right, you know, and so that's something that would be very highly sensitive. But more to the point, you know, when you said you don't care about us hacking, there's only one problem. You know, if we find out that Obama hacked into Angela Merkel's phone and he's, you know, listening in to see if he can hear, you know, dirty stuff. What's that about, you know?
What dirty stuff, man? I mean, are you guys serious? You're worried about Obama hacking Angela Merkel's phone to hear what?
If she is involved in an intimate conversation with someone, and God forbid it isn't her husband, is it our right to hear that? And is it our right to republish it?
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Well, I don't think that any intelligence gathering agency in the world is going to hack into anybody's phone unless they got some pretty good evidence to listen to see if she's having an affair with someone or if Obama is on a, you know, is on a 1-800 number or talking to Michelle about blue panties. You guys, I think you got it all wrong. I think the whole idea of this is to find information that compromises a country's security.
Like what?
You know, like, where do they keep the bombs and everything?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's important, too. But I don't think Obama's going to talk about where they keep bombs because he does have a guy who has the code book and the guy's got it, you know, tied to his wrist or something, you know?
Yeah, that one guy walked around with a code book.
They got a naval officer who has a book with the nuclear codes in it, and it is handcuffed to his arm. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to be talking to the president on the phone, but they're not going to be asking him, where do you hide the bombs?
Well, I mean, what are you talking about?
They're not going to call him. Nobody's going to ask him, oh, yeah, you know what? Like the president knows where the key is to the garage or something?
You guys are, you know, you're dumb, and I enjoy your dumbness because it's entertaining, but you're really breaking records tonight.
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to tell you, Mr. You asked me a question about what, you know, what they would do.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks a lot, Dave.
What do you do, man? It's getting good.
It ain't getting good. That guy is telling me about Obama is going to... Oh, he might spill the beans on where we hide the bombs and Michelle's blue panties and a whole bunch of other stuff. Like I said, the only thing I care about is if they're hacking into Obama's phone, and I don't give a damn about anything other than, you know, if there is real national security stuff being discussed. That's pretty heavy. And that is not anything that you want to, you know, you don't want that stuff getting spilled out there, that's for sure. World famous Phil Henry Show here on this Friday night. What a way to kick it off. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Well, you know,
Never mind, Margaret. We're going to be right back. Don't forget, on Sunday, it's our game of the week with our good man here, Bud Dickman, along with Steve Bozell. They're going to have the game of the week on Phil TV. Starts at 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. Also, very, very shortly, we're going to have gift subscriptions to our website just in time for the holiday gift-giving season of Halloween.
No, it isn't.
Well, whatever. And also Christmas. I think they do that, too. World-famous Phil Henry Show, so check us out online. Get your backstage pass. Get ready for them gift certificates, you know. Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and no time like the present for Ted Bell. Get Ted Wayne in here on this security situation.
Ted of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Thanks a lot, Phil. Ted Bell here, and on my way to the restaurant to Ted's of Beverly Hills. You know, we got Sunday football, the World Series, and Ted's. Get yourself a Ted's of Beverly Hills. All right. I am not at the restaurant right now, Phil, and I do apologize to all of you. I'm just on my way over there right now, but once I get there, of course, we may have more time. But I don't know what you need me to weigh in on. I have been following this Angela Merkel and Barack Obama story with great fascination. I think that all things considered, Phil, I do agree with you, but there is one small problem.
Well, all right, so what we're talking about here, though, is the United States being once again singled out by all of the self-righteous people of the world and here in this country. Oh, my goodness gracious. Look at America. What a bad place. They're spying and, ooh, you know.
No, I totally agree with you. As you very wisely pointed out, Phil, and people might, by the way, Phil, be tuning in right now and be asking, what is a guy that runs a steakhouse, what's he doing talking about international affairs? And I think it's a fair question, but let me turn it around and let me say, what is a guy who doesn't have, and I'm not saying this to indict you or insult you, Phil, I think you've come a long way in this world, but what is a guy who doesn't even have a college degree, what's he doing hosting a talk show, which is you, right?
Absolutely, that's true.
All right, so I think in light of that, I run a steakhouse. Another guy owns a... I knew a guy down here for the longest time. Guy who lived down here in Manhattan Beach. Bill Presley was a dear friend of mine. He owned, get a load of this, he owned a Port-A-John business. Made hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. He owned that Andy Gump business. You remember him?
You had a friend that had that construction site toilets, right?
Yeah. Well, they were Andy Gumps. They're outhouses. The guy owned outhouses. He delivered outhouses to construction sites. He delivered outhouses to wherever people had the need, and there was not a ready-made facility. This is what he did. Made millions. Millions. He put his kids through college. See, this is what I'm saying. It doesn't make any difference what a guy, where he's from. It's what he's been able to do. And I offer that in terms of my credentials. I own a steakhouse. I'm not a brilliant man.
All right, can we get to...
Hold on, Phil, because I...
I just want to get to the story here about Obama.
Well, yeah, hold the phone, though, because what I'm doing is I'm giving a little bit of background on me. Since your program relaunched, I don't even know if anyone knows who the hell I am, to be perfectly honest. Excuse my French. I don't mean to use... I don't mean to be aggressive.
No, I understand, but you're a very successful businessman. And I wanted to just kind of get to the...
No. I know you want to get to it. Now, understand that I'm a paying sponsor. All right, fine. Forget it.
Well, Phil, let Ted...
No, it's all right.
I mean, I'm sorry.
If it's that important to you that I don't even get to... Never mind.
All right. You know, you're right, Ted. Go ahead and finish what you wanted to say.
No, it's going to sound now like I turned into a big crybaby, and, oh, you better let Ted talk. You know, the mail that I get, I'm on your program, Phil, and I get mail afterwards, and it's always, someone is always ripping me, you know, and I live through it okay. I could care. But the mail after this one, I know, is going to be people saying, what a big, fat baby. So, no, I'm not going to do it.
Well, the fact that you're bringing that up now you're going to get mail like that.
Why? If I'm not being a baby about it.
Well, Ted, there are people that want to just stick it in and break it off just for the fun of it.
Well, don't I know that? Don't I know that? You know, I have a father-in-law, so don't I know that? Huh? Huh?
Okay, all right. I understand.
All right. I wanted to say, thank you, Phil, I wanted to say that I come up, I came up through the School of Hard Knocks. That's Ted Bell's school. And, well, I forget all the other stuff I wanted to say, so.
All right, let's just talk about this. Obama and the Obama administration getting caught, with their pants down around their ankles on this one.
No doubt about it.
And the phone hacking thing, what do you make of this?
Well, the thing that is going to hang us up a little bit is something that's very, very difficult for me to bring up, Phil. Although I have no doubt that it's being discussed in a great many offices around the country, around the world, I should say. And it's a tough one. It's a tough one, but you got to deal with it. Obama is an African American.
Okay.
Now, if he gets caught hacking the phone,
Well, just say it.
Yeah, what do you say?
I don't mean anything about this. This is just this country, the way the world is. He gets caught hacking the phone of a white woman.
Oh, will you give me a break?
Well, you've got to consider it, don't you?
What are you talking about, Ted?
What am I talking about? I love President Obama. I think he's a great president, but we live in an ignorant world. Now, here's a black guy that hacked into the phone of a white woman, and she's a crowd. Not a crowd, I shouldn't say, but she's German. And
he didn't hack her phone, man.
What are you talking about, man? He didn't hack her phone. Well, you don't. How do you know that?
Because we know it, bud. What, do you think Obama is over there at the CIA hacking into people's phones for laughs? Somebody else is doing it. Members of our own intelligence gathering services are doing it. Members of the CIA, maybe the FBI, who the hell knows? They're doing it. Obama's not over there directing the operation. Okay?
Is he not the president of the United States? Last time I checked, he's the president. Am I right about that? I could be wrong.
Yes, of course he's the president.
Okay. So he has executive control over these actions, doesn't he?
He has executive control, yes, but he does not necessarily have constant input on every little operation that's being conducted. He gets briefed.
He gets briefed, which means he's either going to approve or he's going to disapprove, correct?
It depends, man. This may be something that was approved under an overall umbrella action. For instance, they might have said, you know, we're going to be hacking some cell phones, some pivotal phones that are foreign, this, that. Who knows if the president knew they were actually going to be the phones of world leaders, okay? But for you to say what you just said...
Oh, give up. Look, I'm not a racist. I'm not saying I'm a racist. I'm just saying we've got international repercussions, Phil. When it starts to filter down to the street level, the German street, when it finds out that a black guy was hacking in...
The German street.
What are you talking about, like the Arab street?
Well, yeah, except the German street. The Arab street is a dangerous street. The German street is also... Any street is dangerous. When you talk about the Arab street, and those are the people that are running... I don't know, but you know, when you think of the Arab street, you're thinking about you guys running around going, la 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 la. I don't know what they're doing, but you go to the German street...
Okay, Ted, I get the idea about the street.
The German street is a bunch of guys that... are just like the Arab street, but they're big, and, I don't know, they're big and fat, you know, they...
Well, so? So what?
Don't you think it's more formidable to look on TV and see a bunch of Germans going la-la-la-la-la, or whatever they say?
You know something, Ted? You're about as dumb as they get, man.
Who said that?
I did, Robert. You tell me about the German street? What about American street?
The American street would be multicolored, okay? There'd be black, white... At least it would look better in terms of the representation. Forget it. You know,
Ted, it's a stupid thing to say. If you're talking about a typical neighborhood in a racist section of America, wherever that may be, because we have a multiracial society, so we have been nose to nose with these problems for a long time, I would probably agree with you. I'd probably say, yeah, you know, we have a history of this horrible kind of racism in this country. Maybe even in Germany, of course, if you're talking about Jewish people or Poland. I don't know, man. But to say that a world leader who happens to be black and a world leader who's a white female, and that's going to be a big contretemps because it's a black guy hacking into a white woman's phone.
Well, so what do you want me to tell you? You know,
Ted, I would expect something a little bit more intelligent from a man that owns Ted's of Beverly Hills, which is a wonderful steakhouse. But now I cannot go into your steakhouse without looking at you and thinking of some surreptitious late-night phone call that I received as a young girl from my boyfriend Benjamin. You remember him, Phil, right? I mentioned him?
Yeah, this was the black... this is a good one, folks. You know...
Wait, who's Benjamin?
Hold on, you're going to love this.
No, what do you mean they're going to love this?
This was a black guy that that Margaret went out with, even though every member of the family hated his guts, including her.
I never...
Well, you did say that. You didn't like him because he was black.
I was younger and dumber.
But you went out with him.
What is that about? I don't understand. How does that work?
Yeah, isn't that the stupidest thing I ever heard, too?
Well, you know, you had to have been there.
I'll bet I did. In any event, I can assure you...
Oh, you can assure me? Well, thank you, Mr. Henry. I'm glad you can assure me. I come on your program with an opinion, and within, 3 seconds, you negate the whole thing and tell people that they can be assured of what?
That what you're saying is horse dung.
There you go. So I come on the program as a sponsor, I give an opinion, and with 3 or 4 words, Mr. Henry negates the whole thing. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Henry. You know, can I have another one, sir? You remember that where the guy got his ass paddled in Animal House, right, a guy?
Yeah, Kevin Bacon.
Who?
Kevin Bacon.
Who's he?
The actor.
Oh, all right, yeah.
All right, Ted. Well,
Not all right, Ted. Sorry, Mr. Bell, that you will no longer be a sponsor on the Phil Henry Show.
He hang up?
Yeah.
Oh, what a jackball.
Now you did it.
I didn't do anything. I didn't do a damn thing. He did it. Now, look, if he's going to come on here and talk crap, then I can talk crap back to him. Hey, Phil, wow, you know, the only problem with it is that Obama's black and she's white and a black guy hacking into a white woman's phone.
Well, I think that there is some sense there if you eliminate...
The fact that it's Ted Bell saying it.
Yeah, if you eliminate the fact Ted Bell saying... All right, we'll be back with more of this falderall here on a world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, and online at philhenryshow.com. We got a whole lot more pretty wild stuff to get into, including Brett Favre has come out and commented on the fact that he has had and continues to have problems as the result of concussions that he suffered as a player in the National Football League. He's having memory lapses. He's having all kinds of trouble, and we're going to discuss that. And in the middle of all of that, guess who offered him a job? The Rams.
What?
Yeah. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. The truth. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, back here with you live here this Friday night, and online at philhenryshow.com. A big thanks to all of our subscribers, all of our listeners, all of our stations, all of our advertisers, all of everybody everywhere for everything that you do. Even you phone hackers, every now and again, you know, you provide us with a couple of laughs. We do appreciate that.
Well, that...
Okay.
That made no sense, and that is an example right there of why people like Don Imus get into trouble.
Yeah.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, you said something, you don't really know why you said it.
Yeah, you said all you phone hackers, you don't know why you said that. You just said it to sound convivial. Well, Don Imus did the same thing with the nappy-headed hoe, and he wound up taking it in the shorts. He wound up being brutally assaulted, dry. Excuse me, I'm saying this as a woman. Brutally assaulted, dry.
Okay, great, Margaret. Wow.
Dad, what an image that... Would you go through it yourself or something?
Come here for a minute.
No.
I said...
Hey! Ow!
Well, it serves you right, man. You said it.
Don't ever say that to me again.
Well, what are you talking about brutally assaulted, dry for?
That's what happened to Don Imus when he said nappy-headed. Let that be a lesson to you.
Well, she's right.
All right, she's right. Great. Good for her. All right, here's some news out of the sporting world. You make of this what you will. Brett Favre has said, I've got some problems here, sports fans. I've had memory problems, memory loss. I've got a few things that have been going on with me in terms of concussions. He has just today commented openly on that. And, you know, as a result, once again, the discussion around concussions in the National, not only the National Football League, high school, college, and even at the Pee Wee or Pop Warner level, there are kids, believe it or not, I've heard from some of these now men, adult men, who as kids suffered head injury, not at the time serious, such as a head a skull fracture or anything like that, but enough of a hit to the head that they had problems, whether it was a headache or blurred vision. Obviously, in retrospect, you know that they had some level of concussion. Now, this is something at a very, very young age. Now, what we're finding, and what doctors are finding, what scientists are finding, is that you get brain damage, and that brain damage can lead to depression. In the case of some players, a possible link to suicide. And this isn't necessarily anything that a medicine is going to be able to address, because you're talking about actual tissue damage. I don't know.
Well, some of the medicines may be able to do that.
What are you talking about, guy committing suicide? You ain't read about that man, guy committing suicide from a concussion. You talking about Brett Favre, Will?
No, I'm not saying Brett Favre, Will. I'm saying Brett Favre has come out and said, I've had problems with my memory. He made the statement, and I'm quoting, I think it's ESPN, he made the statement he was having a hard time remembering specifics about his daughter's games, like her basketball or volleyball games. He's had these kinds of memory problems. So that's scary, and no doubt that played into his ultimate decision to turn down, yes, the St. Louis Rams, who offered the guy a job as recently as today or yesterday.
I beg your pardon, he's 44 years old. I don't know anything about football.
Well, I mean, you can play football, you can particularly play quarterback into your 40s. Some guys have done it, and some guys have done it successfully. And Brett Favre, on the surface, looks to be a pretty good specimen of a guy. You know, he's a fit dude. But the St. Louis Rams, in offering this cat the job, he turned him down. You know, he just said, thank you very much, but no thank you. Now, of course, the Monday morning quarterback in all of us, especially when it comes to sports writers, and especially when it comes to sports writers on the Internet, there ain't nothing like it. And here's a guy writing, is this Adam Scheffler? Yeah, he's weighing in. Well, you know, of all the dumb things, ha, 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 ha.
Well, what's he supposed to say, Phil? Good idea?
No, but it's a pretty easy call to make, to say, why are you offering Brett Favre a job at the age of 44? It's hard to figure out why the Rams attempted to sign 44-year-old Brett Favre, who hasn't played in 3 years and struggled to an 11-touchdown, 19-interception season when we last saw him, and that would have been with the...
That is the Vikings.
Minnesota Vikings, right.
We know the Vikings, man. Yeah, I'm just saying, it's the Vikings.
Yeah, it was the Vikings, right.
Yeah. I know that, man.
Okay, take it easy, will you? After the team lost Sam Bradford to a season-ending knee injury, St. Louis called Brett Favre Sunday night, asking when the 44-year-old retired quarterback, whose now grandfather, would be willing to leave his farm to plow through the back half of the Rams' schedule. Favre didn't like the comment about plow, and he said, "Whose wife?" And
oh, that's real funny.
Well, you know, Margaret, you're really interesting. You're the one that sees sex in everything. You know, you're the one...
I beg your pardon?
You're the one that doesn't like this comment or that comment because, oh, hey, you know, it might be misread, you know, on it. When I think the other morning we were talking about something on it and you said, well, now, let's not talk about anybody getting on anything because we may be...
Because the visual of that, Phil, you can't escape. When you say, I'm on it, what's the first thing people think of? Your rear end going up and down.
Oh, sure, that's the first thing.
Never mind.
So, that's the first thing I think of. One source familiar with the Rams' conversation said that if Favre took them up on the interest, it could break Twitter. Yet the man who famously wavered over whether to play too many times to count didn't waver this time. Through Cook, Favre told the Rams that he was retired. Actually, really, officially, goodbye, thank you, I don't want it, I wouldn't go near it. Not today, not ever. Favre was asked about the Rams' interest in an interview with Sports Talk 570 in Washington on Thursday, and it made it clear he's not returning to the NFL. It's flattering, but you know there's no way I'm going to do that. He said his 2010 NFL season with the Vikings, when a shoulder injury ended his consecutive start streak at 297, convinced him it was time to stop playing. I had a great career. I think, if anything, the last year that I played was an obvious writing on the wall vision for you, if you will. It was time. Now, as of today, we have news about Brett Favre and concussion problems. So, no question about it, man. That probably figured into it. And
you ever had a concussion, Mr. Henry? You played football?
I played third-string football. No, I never had a concussion. Although I can remember one time, I've told the story on the air.
Oh, here we go. Is this the time you got flipped upside down in baseball?
Yeah, we already heard this one.
Okay, forget it.
No, go ahead.
No, forget it, you know.
The whole audience want to hear it.
I got flipped upside down in baseball.
And you had blurred vision.
And I had blurred vision.
And your body vibrated.
And my body vibrated.
The what vibrated? I'm kidding.
So, yeah, you can get hurt, and you can get hurt seriously. All of you young people out there, let that be a lesson to you. All right, coming back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, more news. Steve Bozell and Bud Dickman weighing in. Ringling Brothers may be out of a job here in L.A. Just a kind of a personal thing I got having to do with the elephants and the animals and how they're being treated and, you know, ain't no thing. But apparently, because of this ban on these things called bull hooks, Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey cannot do business in the city of Los Angeles. Now, I've never been to a circus in my life.
Were you at Cirque du Soleil?
Yes, I was.
Then you were at a circus.
Turn off. Don't put on Kanye West, man, because there's all kind of dirty language in there, bud.
Oh, sorry.
In any event, we'll be back next hour. World famous Phil Henry Show. Hey, it's the Phil Henry Show. Welcome back here. And we got Alf Petrie with us from Santa Barbara. You know, Alf was on a show earlier this week because he was talking about these jerky treats, you know, these pet snacks that apparently had some contamination.
Yeah, they're made over in China.
Well, yes, but don't say they were made in China, like...
No, go ahead, say they were made in China, bud.
Well, what does that mean, Phil? In other words, it's foreign, so it's inferior. And again, we go down the road of racism. Again, on your program, we mock the yellow man. We mock, what do you call him, the bull haircut?
Hold on for just about 5 seconds here. It's got nothing to do with race. This has got to do with quality control. The Chinese are notorious for the lousy, crappy product that they send across. And we willingly eat that slop up. I can't believe the American consumer. I really can't. I mean, you talk about a bunch of... We bust down doors and walk over people to the point where we kill them so we can go into a Walmart or some other place and buy that cheap Chinese crap that they sell, whether it's some recycled videotape or whatever. Then we go and we buy the seafood that they sent over here, which is... Have you ever seen those fish communes?
I wouldn't know about it.
Yeah, you see that? You'll never want to go to the bathroom again.
What?
What has that got to do with it?
Well...
I mean, but they do. They have these fish farms over there swimming in sewage. And then they tank that and they sell it to us. And now they got these pet treats and everything else that they've... Then they got these pet treats. God knows what those things are made out of. And they killed 600 dogs and cats.
Well, again, Phil, that is very sad, but I don't think we go down the road of, well, here comes the bull haircut.
Did I say anything about a bull haircut? Did I?
Yeah, I know. See, the way he's looking. Look at the way he's looking right there.
What are you laughing about?
We're talking about Mr. Spock.
Yeah.
Well, all right, Mr. Spock haircuts, then.
I didn't say anything about it, and I'm not... And we don't do that on the show, and it's really unfair of you to say that, especially to a new listener. Somebody is tuning in and is thinking, oh, is this some kind of a right-wing racist show? No, man.
Well, who's the one that said Mr. Spock haircut?
Any one of these clowns here, or listeners, or some stuff that, you know...
Uh-huh.
It ain't me. All right, anyway, so, yeah, the Chinese have had these treats, that these dog treats that apparently were produced over there and sent here. So Alf was on talking about that. You get me sidetracked in this stuff. We're going to get Alf on here to talk about a problem that was not really this particular story, but a problem with a Toyota brand or a Toyota model, And I think this was the stuck accelerator situation. If you remember, Toyota was having problems with the accelerator sticking when you accelerated up to a certain speed. And there was a recall, and I guess they've dealt with that. But I think we're, and when I say we, I mean Bud, is having a hard time finding it.
Man, would you find a story, man? I'm still looking.
All right, fine. We'll find it. But in the meantime, Alf has his own story, considering the fact that for a long time, he worked at the studios in Hollywood. He was an animal wrangler, but did a great deal of commuting between where he was living at the time, which is in Ojai, California, and then he's going down to the Los Angeles, right down into the west side of Los Angeles, which is a good, you know, that's a 50-mile run. He was doing that every single solitary day, and we'll get him on the line here from Ojai tonight. Hey, Alf, I wanted to ask you a question, man. How long did that take you to drive every morning from Ojai into West L.A.?
Probably about, I would get up at 3:30 in the morning and leave about 4 o'clock because I wanted to get into the studio by no later than 6:30, 6. So you want to give yourself a leeway, you know, and that was primarily what I was interested in.
All right, so, wow, that's a long, long drive.
It was a very long drive, but I enjoyed all the years that I spent there, and we had a great time with all of the great stars from working with the wonderful animals, and, I love the animals, and retirement has been a lot of fun. We're living here in Ojai, California.
What do you do up there in Ojai?
Well, right now I'm retired, you know.
No, I know that, but...
We enjoy a lot of things. We enjoy the, hiking and the mountains are very beautiful here. And right now we're looking at these fire tankers are coming in low over the horizon to put out. There was a very small brush fire here earlier.
You're kidding.
I'm sorry?
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not.
This is exactly the same thing Steve Bozil was dealing with.
I don't know. We've had a very small brush fire. They're trying to tamp it down right now.
You got a fire tank. You got tanker planes flying in over top of you, and this is they sound exactly like the ones that were flying over Bozell's house. Do you know a Steve Bozell?
I never heard of him.
Okay, because he lives down in Corona, which is far away from you, and they had tanker planes flying in just like that.
Yeah, well, that's what they do. They come in low, and they go out here. Probably at the Lake Casitas, and they get the water to come in, and they drop it on a hot spot. That's what they're doing right now. So we're out front, and we're watching that.
All right. Let me ask you about the problem that you had with your car. It was not a Toyota, as I understand. What kind of car was it?
Well, the car I had was an old Simca, and I don't know if they, if you know the Simca, it's a Scandinavian car. I had an it was an import, obviously, and it was a car that was a what they used to call a coupe, what they used to call it, economy size, a coupe like that, you know. And that the Simca, it was like the old Renault Dauphine. You remember the Renault Dauphine?
Yeah, the old Renault. That was a French-made car.
Yeah, back before the United States or the Japanese were making these kinds of small cars, the French were making them, the Swedish was making them, and a great many countries in Europe, and I had a Simca. And I loved this car because while it was a small car, a small-sized car, it comes again. Look at that.
Yeah.
So they're coming in, they're bringing the water in from Lake Casitas.
Yeah, I swear to God, I'm on the phone a couple times with Steve Bozell down here in Corona.
I don't know who you keep talking about, a guy Bozell. I wouldn't know him.
No, I understand that, but he's got this same thing.
Got a tanker flying in.
What?
He got a tanker flying over. Is there a guy hanging his bare butt out?
What's up?
Never mind. So you had the Simca.
I had a Simca, and I was able to carry dog cages, cat cages that we would carry sometimes down to the studios. And it was a good car, but I had the same problem. With a stock accelerator, and I'd get on the freeway, and the accelerator would stick. And I can't tell you the number of times I ran right into the back end of cars or ran into a wall or a building or something. And because I love this car so much, I said, well, what is the problem? And I took this in to have it looked at, I don't know how many times, Phil. There was a Scandinavian Motors. They had a mechanic over there would look at this, and he said, I can't tell you. Now, this is before the days they had computers in the engines. A computer can track the event. You aware of that?
Yeah, I can. I mean, yes, I am. They look at the computer, and they see the actual the day and the week preceding, right?
Yeah, and they can track the event, and they'll tell you, aha, right here on a computer it says something. At this particular time, this thing happened. Let's go back. Let's look. So they didn't have that in those days, and I had the car in a number of times.
Well, let me ask you, Alf, how many times did you have an accident with the car?
Probably about a half a dozen times. I ran into walls. I ran on the back end of cars. I ran into a cop car just in front of Sony Studios one time. And I told these guys at the Simca, at the Scandinavian Motors, I said, you have got to find what was wrong with this, or I'm not gonna take the car back until you know what's wrong with it. I mean, I just said that, and I don't care. There was a cage in the car, and I had two of my cats. I said, I'll leave the cats there, and I don't care if they die. I wasn't serious, but I wanted them to know that I meant what I said, you know.
But if you're not serious, then how do you mean what you say?
What's that?
If you weren't serious, how could you mean it?
If I wasn't, well, because I said to them, the cats will die. They weren't going to die, but I wanted them to believe the cats would die.
But the cats were all right, right?
No, they died.
Well, then you said you didn't want the cats to die.
I didn't, but I had to show them that I was serious.
Yeah, so that's what I mean.
No, you guys, you're getting it wrong.
All right, hold on for a minute. We'll be back with Alf Petrie as he talks. We're referencing only tangentially, folks, the Toyota problem with the stuck accelerator. He's talking about a car that he had called a Simca that had, as he says, a similar situation, a similar problem, if you will, a stuck accelerator, something that, you know, obviously was causing the car to accelerate. And you can't control a car when it's accelerating. You have no control over it. And I've had similar problems. It's a pretty scary thing. I don't know that you necessarily have to run into the back of something, though.
Well, what do you do? What did you do?
Well, what I did is I pulled it over to the side of the road. As soon as I felt the engine racing, and that's what basically is happening, I put it into neutral and coaxed it over to the side of the road. So I knew that I wouldn't be having any problem with it accelerating anymore, and I was just hoping, you know, I could get over to the side of the road. Unfortunately, people tend to know that you're in a little bit of distress, and we'll get out of the way. And in that case, at least they did. We'll be right back here with more. We got, as I said, Alf Petrie on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And don't forget, this month we're giving away a free download with every one of our new subscriptions. So check it out. Head over to the shop, too, online shop, man, and pick up some Phil crap. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. And we have on the line Alf Petrie, and the story I was looking at here, Toyota Motor Corporation's first loss in a sudden acceleration case is in an Oklahoma courtroom this week, and it could embolden attorneys nationwide who are looking to bring hundreds of similar cases. Worse for the Japanese automaker, the verdict centered on the company's electronics, which have been a focus for plaintiffs seeking to prove safety defects in the company's cars. Toyota on Friday confirmed that it had reached a confidential settlement in the lawsuit, which involved a 2007 crash, and this was in a acceleration. It was called settling an acceleration lawsuit. That is the car accelerating essentially at random. And I mentioned to Margaret and you guys before we went on the onto our break that I've had acceleration problems, but I never had anything as serious as losing control of the car. Alf Petrie with us. So Alf, you had a Simca and the car is accelerating and you got it into a mechanic.
Right, I got it into a mechanic, we had a cat in the cage.
You did, a cat died.
Right. Well, I told him, I said, even if the cat's got to die, it wasn't serious, but these guys had that thing in the shop so long, I came to get the car eventually, and there's a cat in the cage. The cat's dead in the cage.
What does that mean, man?
Why didn't you take the animal with you?
The because I thought it would motivate these guys to get the cat, or to fix the car, I mean. And it didn't. And it's a dead cat, you know. And I said, you got to be. What is that about, you know?
Well, how are you blaming them for that? You left the cat there.
What's that?
How are you blaming them that? How can you blame them for that?
How am I blaming them that? I don't understand that.
What did you blame them for? You left the cat there.
You left the cat, God. You left the cat in the cage.
Yeah, I left the cat in the cage because I thought it would motivate.
All right, so it didn't motivate him, so you got a dead cat. What was wrong with the car?
Well, what was wrong with the car is they found out that when I got into the car, apparently the carpeting, the little rug under the feet, when you get in, I pushed the rug up underneath the accelerator so that when I accelerated, it would catch on the rug and it would stick. And I said to them, you got to be kidding me. I said, you said, you kill a cat for that? And this guy, you understand, is a Swedish guy. He said, I didn't kill any cat. You're the one who left the cat in the car. And so I had no choice but to storm out of there. I left the car. I said, there's a dead cat on your conscience, see? Now,
Wait. Give me this again, man. What was the cause of the acceleration?
That the carpeting on the floor stuck on the accelerator.
He said that the carpeting, the floor carpeting in the car stuck on the accelerator.
And that's what caused the accelerator to stick?
Yeah, it caused the accelerator to stick. So I threw up my hands and I walked home. And here's the thing. This place was in Pasadena.
And you walked home to Ojai?
Yeah.
All right, man.
You ever played football?
What's that?
Did you ever play football?
No, I never played football.
You ever have a concussion?
I don't, not to my knowledge. No, why?
Never mind. So thank you very much, man. And
That was my one experience, but I never had a Toyota.
Right, okay. Well, that's good. So thanks a lot. I'm sorry about the cat, but at least all your other cats are okay. Do you still drive a Simca?
Yeah, oh, I love them. You know, I've got a Simca, and the one that I've got, I got from a guy up in the Mojave, and he is a mechanic, a Simca mechanic, so he has a part, so I can drive it up there and get it. I love this car. And
do you have that stuck accelerator problem?
No, because when I got the carpeting, I replaced it with tile, you know, and
you replaced the carpeting in your car with tile?
What are you talking about?
I'm saying I replaced it with Spanish pavers. So it doesn't stick no more. And
okay, well, great. And you got running water in that car?
Right.
I'm kidding around, Alf. Thank you very much. And we'll have you on another time when there's another story.
Yes, involving mental illness.
You know, I can barely hear you. Now, look,
All right, so that's the last time we have that guy on. I mean, you know, it's one thing to be talking about. I'll tell you, that stuck accelerator because of the carpeting, and I've got tile in the car now. See, that's a guy that, it's a good thing he's living out in Ojai, man. I hope he's not working in L.A. anymore, which means he'd be driving long distances, and that would mean a whole lot of people would be dead. Okay.
Where did you find that guy, anyway?
He's a guy that we've known about for a long time, you know. He was talking about those jerky treats.
Well, I think you should have him on when it comes to things having to do with animals, because that's what he does. But when you had him on to talk about a car, he sounded befuddled.
Sounds like he has a dementia.
He sounds like he might have Alzheimer's.
No, I don't think so. I
You don't think so?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, well, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, folks. A Simca. Anyway, Toyota, the whole thing was about accelerating cars and the safety problems with cars.
You got an old guy on about a car problem, man? You asking for it.
Yeah, you're asking for $300 worth.
All right, fine. J.P. Morgan in a $5.1 billion deal with a housing agency. This is what I was going nuts about not too long ago during a show, actually during a break. You know, every time we're turning around now, here comes another bank with another problem. You got B of A. Here's another problem with B of A. You got a problem with Countrywide. Here's J.P. Morgan, $5.1 billion deal with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac about the quality of mortgage securities and home loans it sold to them during the housing boom. They're paying $5.1 billion to settle claims that it and firms it bought misled Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. $5.1 billion. Now, I don't care what anybody says. You know, if this represents the very finest, and I'm led to believe that it does, represents the very finest in American banking, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, I mean, excuse me, J.P. Morgan, this is the top of the line. These are the best of the best. Right? Isn't that what the what it's all about?
Well, in what sense?
In the sense that J.P. Morgan on Wall Street in New York, the greatest financial minds in the world, are doing business on Wall Street. The top of the line. And look at what we got. We got fraud. We've got misleading people. We've got mortgage and security problems. We've got a 2008 recession, pretty much a depression that we're still going through, by the way. We're still going through it. I mean, we're not out of this thing. I just saw the thing today. You know, there's consumer confidence that's at an all-time low.
Yeah, consumer confidence, though, making more confident, just make better stuff.
No, man, it ain't about making better stuff. They got to be more confident, like how the money is and everything.
Well,
make better stuff. But the unusually timed announcement, which appeared to catch other parties involved in the negotiations by surprise, covered not only $4 billion that was expected as part of the larger deal, but also an additional $5.1 billion to cover separate issues. So in other words, folks, if there was any doubt when all this stuff was coming down that it would involve criminality, fraud, or a combination therein, I mean, you know, what's the line that you draw between, well, you know, we made some bad decisions, and out and out, I don't think there's any difference. If there was any doubt, let it be erased. B of A, my personal, that's where I do my banking. That's where my business accounts are, my personal accounts are. My home mortgage is there. Bank of America has had to admit liability in the countrywide fraud. The country driven into the depths of a recession depression, man, the likes of which we haven't seen since the Great Depression, because of these cheap, dirty, no good, oh, man.
Watch it.
You have to watch it, Phil. We all have to swim in the same water.
Yeah. What's that mean?
It means you've got to watch what you're saying.
I'm not going to watch what... What's to watch, man? World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. What do you mean we all have to swim in the same water?
I mean, dude, you got to, you know, as far as it goes.
All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and talk a little bit more about this. We have Larry Grover standing by. We also have Brass Villanueva from Los Molos to talk about it, and Frank Gray and others here, J.P. Morgan, and a whole financial fang. We'll be right back. All right, the Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. What?
Well, I can't believe what you just said.
The Wire, yeah, The Wire. You didn't even hear what Matt said.
I know, Matt liked it. I think The Wire blew.
The Wire blew. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want this to be official. Phil Henry just said that The Wire blew, which I think is language that is more befitting the gutter and the sewer than a radio program. But nonetheless,
The Wire was not about the best cop show that there ever was.
Are you nuts or something?
I agree with Phil, man. I don't think that was good.
The Wire was the most formulaic turd. I shouldn't say. You know what? People work so hard on these shows. It wasn't anything. I should have probably watched more than a couple episodes.
Thank you. How would you like this radio show to be judged on a couple of episodes, though? If people just heard two episodes of this program, they wouldn't stop throwing up.
Hey.
Thank you.
Well, now, ain't that a nice how do you do? And you're on this show.
Nonetheless.
They wouldn't stop. All right. I have no idea what the hell is going on here. I know we have a couple of guests lined up, but, Bud, you wanted to make a point here.
No, she did.
Who's she?
You.
Who's you?
Margaret. Call her Margaret.
Sorry, Margaret did.
I just think that it is... Bud asked... I asked, actually, who was the man who played the lead person on the unit, the show that you were on?
Yeah.
And Bud said, I don't know, but it was the black guy, and I took great offense to that, Phil. That kind of racism, however benign, is something...
Wait, hold on. How's that racism?
How? Are you kidding?
Well, I mean, why did you say the black guy?
Well, now, hold on for just a second here. Bud didn't mean to be racist. He identified the actor as the black guy because the fact is there are far fewer black people, whether it be on television or in regular life, than there are white people. We've got about 13%, 14% of the population. So to say, oh, he was the black man, is to say, in a crowd of faces, if you want to identify somebody quickly, what's wrong with mentioning their race?
Well, now I've heard it all.
Yep.
You finally got it said.
Will you knock it off with the finally got it said? What's that? Like, what did I just say that's so earth-shaking?
Are you kidding me? So, who was the actor? Well, he was the black one. I think it demeans. I think it is, it gives me the creeps. And I'm trying to be intelligent here.
Yeah, that's a very intelligent thing to say.
Well,
Mr. Henry, you say that's the black guy.
What I'm saying is, when someone says, I'll give you an example. I was standing with a father after a football game that my son had been in. And there was a kid that was taken off the field on a stretcher. Speak of a concussion. This kid had a concussion, okay? Now, I'm standing at the locker room door with another father, and he's an African-American gentleman. And I say this because he was waiting for his son to come out of the locker room. And he kept glancing back at the ambulance, and then he kept glancing down at the door. And I'm trying to be Mr. Politically Correct, right? When the gentleman asked me, he said, did you see who the kid was that was taken into that ambulance? And I said, yes, sir, I did. They just took him over there. Now he's a member of the second string. Young man, I think he was a sophomore. I think I recognized the kid, okay?
Yeah.
And there's Phil trying to be Mr. Politically Correct. I didn't say it was a white kid. And I should have earlier because it would have put this man's mind at rest. He was wondering, was that my son that was taken away? Because I don't see anybody coming out of this locker room. And finally, I looked at him, I said, he was a white kid, sir. So, and the man said, thank you. And the obvious relief on his face, coupled with the thank you, told me that at least he knew that whoever that boy was being taken in the ambulance wasn't his son.
Well, but I'm sure he got home and said to his wife, I'm glad that our boy is okay, but this white man thought he was going to, I don't know.
Yeah, probably thought a white man's going to lord it all over him.
Exactly.
What? Are you serious?
Phil, you don't know. He probably got home and said some white thought he was going to be all touchy-feely and it was Brotherhood Week. And
I don't think so at all. This guy was worried. I could tell he was worried and I needed to say something else. The guy's like looking. I said, yeah, they took the boy in the ambulance and he's looking and he's back. And I said, he was a white kid. And he said, thank you. I can tell the guy was relieved and said, thank you. He didn't look at me like I said something, like I was speaking Martian. He looked at me and said, thank you. So, you know, I mean, look, whatever identifies somebody, identifies them. Who was it? What's the, oh, he's the black actor. Oh, okay, now I know. I don't call that racist at all. I call that the most readily identifiable feature of any individual.
Well, then why don't you say that he was the white one?
Because there's 90 million white guys. On any given TV show, you narrow it down, he was one of the two black guys. How many black guys are on a TV show, the average television show?
Yeah, that's the racism part right there. They had to hire more black actors and everything.
What? Not about hiring more black actors.
Here I am sticking up for you, and now you're going against me. Ain't that just like a black guy to put the spear in my back?
Hey, watch it. Watch it out.
I'm only kidding.
Hey, Bud, what? Even when you're joking, stop with the spear in the back stuff, okay?
I'll kick your ass, man.
I'm only kidding.
Oh, now you're going to start the ball?
Yeah.
Well, then don't say stick the spear in the back.
I'm only joking around.
Ain't funny, man.
That's what I'm saying, you know? I mean, what are you, racist?
Well, I didn't like it, and I stand by what I said, and I would prefer, if you are going to identify someone to me, give me something more specific.
All right, well, what would have been more specific than to say he was the black guy in the unit?
Who you could, the big, tall, burly, handsome guy with the deep voice?
The big, tall, burly, handsome guy with the deep voice. All right, that probably would have worked. Yeah.
Well, don't Dwayne need say it?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably easier to say black than the big, tall, burly, guy, handsome guy, with the deep voice. You're talking about Dennis Haysbert, who was the actor on that show, and he is a big, tall, burly guy who's handsome with a deep voice. He's also black, so I don't know, you know.
Well, Phil, guys like you that want to profile, racially profile, it saddens my heart. There, and yes, I did belch.
And you're proud of that, aren't you?
I'm proud of the fact that I won't be bullied by this staff of men.
You know, I'm not being bullied by a staff of men. You belching just like you work on a dock, man, unloading big crates and all that. Oh, man.
I beg your pardon?
You do. You belch just like you're a dock worker, like a stevedore. Like some guy in overalls with a hook in his pocket, smoking a big fat cigar.
Speaking of cigars...
They're in the bathroom.
Thank you.
Oh, God. Those things stink, bud.
Well, I found it. She wants a white, Al.
Have you ever met a woman in your life? A woman, a female, who, first of all, smokes... Yeah, I know women that smoke cigars, but have you ever met one that must smoke only White Owls? That's like something that my grandfather smoked. That's the stuff that... That's like something the guy at the corner newsstand... When I was a kid, we used to have these newsstands, you know, and there'd be a guy there, and he's leaning on the counter, and he's reading a newspaper, and he's got a big, fat stogie that he's puffing away on, and that's what he smoked, you know? Or when I went to the ball game... Used to be able to smoke cigars and cigarettes at the baseball stadium. The first thing when I walked into Dodger Stadium as a 10-year-old kid, the first thing I smelled were hot dogs and cigars.
Man, that must have been great.
It was. It was fantastic. It was the best smell I ever smelled in my life. To this day, I smell hot dogs and cigars. I think of a baseball stadium specifically, the ballpark. I don't know what it is about cigars, but man, guys used to smoke those a lot.
Yeah, smoke one up.
I never smoke cigars, man, because they boil your guts. How do you inhale? You know, to smoke, for me, when I smoked, half of the fun was inhaling the fumes, you know, inhaling the nicotine. It was good. That's why you smoked. And these cats, well, I smoke a cigar. Would you inhale? No, you don't inhale a cigar. Well, what's the point, man? You just have that thing in your mouth. Yeah, I'll bet you do.
That's what she said.
Would you please stop you?
Shut up, bud.
Smoking that cigar.
Speaking of having something in your mouth...
Yes, it's a White Owl cigar. God, you are a... You know something? The filth that is in your minds... And besides, look at this. What penis is shaped like this?
All right, thank you very much. We're going to be back here with more on the Phil Henry Show. Some more of the news as yet to cover. We do appreciate the appearance on our program here of our guests. Now, we were going to talk about J.P. Morgan and the housing deal with Brass Villanueva and also Larry Grover and... General Galen Shaw. Is he on the line?
We got two of the three. Got General Shaw and got Brass.
All right. Well, when we come back out, we'll have at least one, if not all three, of those guys with us here. World famous Phil Henry Show, 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445, and online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Coming right back.
Yeah. Don't go away.
Thank you. World famous Phil Henry Show here online at philhenryshow.com as well. Brass Villanueva going to join us from his activist organization, Los Malos. We'll also have General Galen Shaw, right?
Yes, the general is on line three right now. Are you taking?
No, I'm not taking General Shaw right now. I'm taking Brass. How you been, Brass? Haven't talked to you in a long, long time, man. How's it going?
I'm doing all right, and great to be with you.
And how's your organization?
Our small stuff is going on really good, and we are trying as hard as we can, you know, to alert the community as to the abuses of these banksters that have really run roughshod in the community, and the homes that are selling are taking out one of these people, you know.
Your organization, Los Malos, means the bad, right?
Yeah, we've been down that road before.
No, I understand that, Brass, but, you know, you're not... I understand in talking to you in the past that you have a very strong tie to your community, primarily to the Hispanic community, the Mexican-American community. I understand that. You don't speak Spanish, and you said that the extent of your knowledge of Mexican food is Taco Bell.
And I also explained to you, Mr. Henry, why that is. Because
no, you yes, you did explain that.
Because of, if I can finish what I'm going to say, is because of, you know, There are millions of young Hispanic men, proud Latin men like myself, who have the culture beat out of them, you know.
When you say the culture has been beaten out of you, Brass, how did they beat the culture out of you to the point where you only know Taco Bell?
Because of the fact that it was frowned upon to be tied to my culture too tightly. I rejected any food that was from that was made in the Mexican fashion, you know. So I was afraid to go into any authentic restaurant for fear that I was not being American enough, and instead but I craved it. My DNA, being Hispanic, craved it.
What do you mean DNA?
I mean my DNA. What's so tough to understand that?
Your DNA craved it because you're Hispanic.
That's right. That's right.
So if your DNA craved it, why didn't you go in a real Mexican restaurant?
Because the only one that I knew about in my neighborhood was Taco Bell. I mean, how hard is that to understand?
Well, were there no authentic Mexican restaurants in your neighborhood?
If there was, I was not aware of it because I would not recognize what an authentic Mexican restaurant looked like.
Well, what would it look like to you?
I had it beat out of me.
If you had it beat out of you, the culture, what does an authentic Mexican restaurant look like?
It just looks like someone's house or something. I don't...
You try to tell me they're a Mexican restaurant?
Bud, would you just let me do... So it looked like someone's house.
Right. I mean, Taco Bell's going to have a big bell, and you can smell the burrito from a good block off, and...
So you're not smelling a burrito, but can't you smell the Mexican food?
I smell a Mexican food. I don't know that that's food. It smells like lard. There's some dog mixed in.
Boy, you must have had some really rotten restaurants in your neighborhood. So you're looking at a Mexican restaurant.
Wait, what do you mean rotten?
You're smelling lard and dog.
I'm smelling whatever they use for meat, and it was not the same kind of meat they use at Taco Bell. But if you say what a Mexican restaurant looked like, I would not know. It looked like a guy's house or something.
Was there a Mexican restaurant in your neighborhood?
I don't know, you know.
Well, is it a good bet?
It probably is a good bet. There was one place that someone said to me years later, hey, that's a place there, that's a Mexican restaurant, you know, that we could have gone to. I said, well, that looks like just a building, you know. It could be a dentist office. And at the time, when I first saw that, I said, I thought that was like your house or something. He said, my house? He said, look, the sign there says La Casa Que Canta, which is the house that sings in Spanish. That's what he told me. I said, so? He said, you think my house is going to have a neon sign on top of it like that? I said, I don't know.
Well, did homes have neon signs on them? No. So here's a place that says, what did it say?
La Casa Que, something about La Casa, some La Casa, you know.
Yes, the house.
Yeah, the house, you know. And he goes, yeah, that's a Mexican restaurant. I said, I thought that was where you lived.
Did you go there looking for him?
I went there a couple times. Look, I said, I asked if anybody's seen Robert, and they go, what's his last name? I get a last name. They said, no. I said, maybe he's not home.
When you walked into the restaurant, did you see tables with people eating?
Yeah, but they got, people don't eat in their own house?
By the, were there 50, 100 people in there?
A couple guys. So I left. But later on, when I phoned Los Malos, because I felt like a real ass, you know, people said to me, well, have you never been to a Mexican restaurant? I thought, no, I haven't. They said, yes, you have. So I said, well, I'm going to phone Los Malos to get some pride going on this thing, because I felt all humiliated and everything.
You felt humiliated. Okay, Brass Villanueva is with us, and we're going to talk about J.P. Morgan paying $5.1 billion, after losing this claim. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, I mean, their lenders associated with J.P. Morgan defrauded Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac of billions of dollars, and so J.P. Morgan's been ordered to pay, and Brass is with us. So, all right, you have this. Let's forget about the Hispanic tie-in.
You can't forget that because I am advocating on behalf of my community.
You can't advocate on behalf of your community if you think a Mexican restaurant is Taco Bell and a real Mexican restaurant is a house where your friend lived.
Why can't I?
You can. I just thought we'd steer it away from there so we don't get bogged down in your, you know, qualifications.
Hey, hold on, Mr. Ray. I am Hispanic, okay? I'm a proud Latin male. I don't speak Spanish. and I wouldn't know really what good Mexican food is.
Have you ever been to Mexico?
No, I have not.
Why not?
Because I've had it beat out of me.
What do you mean you had it beat out of you?
My desire to go to Mexico, it just got beat out of me, the need to go there. That's all I'm saying.
And are you talking physically? Are you talking literally beaten out of you?
I mean, it was beat out of me by my teachers in the way that I was taught. But, yeah, it for all intents and purposes, got beat out of me.
All right, I got to tell you, man, if I were you, and this is just my opinion, I'd give up on the whole Hispanic advocacy thing until you taste some real Hispanic food and speak Spanish.
And Taco Bell is what again?
It's that's gringoed up. That ain't. I wouldn't call that authentic Hispanic food. But hey, you know.
Well, it's burrito.
I wouldn't call it.
It's got tacos, right?
Yeah.
And it's got their hot sauce.
That doesn't mean anything, man.
They're selling churros now. So.
No. Wrong. No.
It don't rate.
No, it don't rate. No. They're selling churros now. All right, General Galen Shaw is joining us from Washington, D.C. as we continue this discussion here, and the discussion centering around this J.P. Morgan fine. General Shaw, how are you, sir? And it's good to talk to you.
Phil, I'm doing well, and a very pleasant good evening to your young friend there, Mr. Villanueva.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's nice to speak with you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, General. So you saw the housing crash. You witnessed the recession of 2008. You saw the resultant job loss, the consumer confidence going through the toilet. You saw people losing their homes left and right. And now, in the last couple of days, we have seen Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, and others who are being held accountable for these bad loans, fraudulent practices. $5.1 billion today for J.P. Morgan. B of A has been held liable for countrywide, and God knows how much that will ultimately cost them. What's your read?
Well, the read that I have...
Jack, I want to ask a question, Mr. Henry, if I could. This is Brass.
Go ahead.
You are a general, right?
Yes, sir, I'm a general. I am retired.
And what are your qualifications to speak on a housing crisis?
Well, I think my qualifications are the... What are yours? You think that Taco Bell is all that and a bag of pork rinds? Well, you know...
My qualifications are I represent working people, you know. And
well, you represent working people, but I represent retired people and one who has labored the extent of his life on behalf of the American people, defending them. And you are here... talking about Taco Bell and a neon sign on top of your friend's house, and I've been listening, Phil, very carefully to your interview with this young man. He's a fine young man, but I agree with you. I don't know what his Hispanic roots.
Well, my Hispanic, I'm sorry, I shouldn't even brought it up.
Yeah, you're that's not a fight you're going to win there, Brass, okay? So hang on here, guys. We'll get back to General Shaw and the J.P. Morgan if we have time next hour, which I suppose we will. I'm hoping that we will. This has been a whack show, man. I'm glad it's Friday, but hey, when am I not glad when it's Friday? When am I not glad it's Friday? You know, world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Go to our shop and pick up on as soon as we get them, and I understand that it won't be long now, gift subscriptions to the website. Say, give one to Mom.
It was 1989, my thoughts were short, my hair was long.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Vernon Dozier also standing by to talk with us this hour about Facebook. Facebook. That's always a great topic, Facebook. Facebook should be the topic every day of every talk show everywhere in the world because Facebook is doing more business than every talk show anywhere in the world, including television shows.
You think so?
I think so. I know so. Billions and billions of people. That's where it's happening, man, Facebook. That's where it is happening. All right, now we also have some other stories here. Meet the woman who tells your exes, get a load of this. How's this for a job? This is a service that's provided. The woman who tells your exes they may have an STD. You gave it to them.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you that if you have an STD and you gave it to your girlfriend or girlfriends, there is a service out there that will tell them for you.
Well, now I've heard it all. So, in other words, if you don't have the guts, you know...
You don't talk about that time.
No, I'll talk about it.
You mean that happened to you?
Excuse me. When I was younger, and if I hear any comment out of him, Phil, I'm going to take the emery board that I have in my purse that has a point on the end of it.
Margaret, don't threaten violence.
Then keep him away from me. When I was younger, I was about to say, and Cliff Whidbey, a couple of the guys that I dated, Cliff Whidbey was one of them, Brand Newell was another. These were all boys that my family knew, and all of them came from very prominent families. And we socialized together, but the parents did as well as the young people. And I had, unfortunately, there was a case of some kind of fungus. It was called genital fungus.
Oh, God!
Would you shut up?
Come on, Bud. Grow up.
God!
I said to shut up, Bud.
Can't you talk about a genital fungus?
Go ahead.
There was a case of genital fungus that began making its way around the young men in our group, and it apparently, I say apparently, because to this day I'm not clear, originated with me, and you know something? Grow up, because we all have been there.
Okay.
Well, what does okay mean?
Well, Margaret, maybe we've all been there in terms of having some kind of an infection. I don't ever remember myself being patient zero.
Patient zero.
Well, get your jollies off, Phil. Make sure you get your little cuties off, because I'm talking about a very important health issue. You really got some guts talking to me like that.
God!
I told you.
Watch it. Bud, what's with the gut?
Because it grosses me out.
It came back to me, all right? Now, this happens whether you want to believe it or not. There's every woman listening to me right now, it's happened to her. There's been a case of some kind of STD, some sort of viral or a bacteriological infection that has struck a group of guys in your group, and it's come back to you. Every woman knows.
What do you mean every woman knows? What does that mean? Every single woman listening has been a patient zero?
What is patient zero, if you don't mind me asking?
That is a term that we've learned. It's a term that arose from, quite frankly, from the AIDS epidemic.
How dare you?
Wait a minute. I'm not saying that's what you had. I'm saying it's a medical term that means the originating infectious person. I mean...
And they had a patient zero for AIDS.
They most certainly did.
Yeah, and remember when you... Well...
What?
Well, there's no such guy as Tarzan, right?
No, man, there ain't no such guy as Tarzan.
Because Bill Whidbey said that Tarzan was patient zero.
Of AIDS?
Yeah.
Tarzan was... Who's Bill Whidbey? I told you I knew someone named Cliff Whidbey.
Oh, okay.
Is that the same guy?
That's my understanding.
Well, Cliff is a... Are you kidding me?
Wait a minute. Wait just a minute. You know this guy Cliff Whidbey still?
Yes, he moved out to Los Angeles.
All right, and this guy who you apparently infected...
With a very benign genital fungus. It only looked bad because it spread up to the navel.
Oh, God! Margaret.
Oh, grow up.
I'm growing up. I'm rapidly growing up as you're telling the story. I'm trying to get older as you tell this. Oh, my God.
In any event, what did Cliff tell you?
Cliff told me that patient zero was Tarzan for AIDS.
Well, what is your information, Phil?
You got to be kidding, right?
Well,
Tarzan doesn't exist. Patient zero.
He said that, well...
Yeah, he said, I remember what he said. He said, Tarzan got it from Cheetah, and he gave it to Jane.
Well, then Jane's the one that brought it into the States, right?
Would you people wake up? There is no such person as Tarzan or Jane. He got it from Cheetah, huh?
Oh, man.
I don't find anything funny about it.
All right, I'm sorry. You're right. It's not funny.
Anyway, to conclude my story, I think all of us are aware of the fact that sooner or later you'll have to tell, and in my case, And don't make this out like I'm some kind of a slut. That was in my younger days. And yes, there were a good 7 or 8 boys that had to be told. Now, I'm glad that you're being respectful, because if any of you said anything...
Margaret, you already threatened him with stabbing, and I will only say that I'm glad you've changed your youthful ways.
What does that mean? That's intimating that I'm some sort of aberrant... What, do you think I was a prostitute?
Well, talking about being patient zero with a fungal...
I wasn't patient zero with a fungal.
Yeah, you were. You said in your group, it all traced back to you, 7 or 8 guys.
Never mind. You know, you guys are, I'm going to use the word, you guys are mentally retarded. Thank you.
Well, that's very, very offensive of you, and you shouldn't use those words.
Yes, and it was offensive getting the call from Dr. Edbin, who was my father's doctor, and he was shocked, and my father almost collapsed when he said, your daughter is the source for a valley-wide fungal infection. We've only now been able to contain it in this county. And I was never more humiliated.
Margaret, this story is getting more grotesque.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
What am I talking about?
All right, the Phil Hendry Show continuing here, and welcome, folks. What I was trying to say... Who?
Bobby.
I don't want to talk to that slut.
Hold on for a minute, for God's sake. Vince Dooley is on... Bobby Dooley is joining us. And I just want to say, Bobby, congratulations on your first week of podcasts. I hear they went swimmingly.
Thank you very much, Phil. We really had a great time with him. I'm simply here to ask Margaret if she would refrain from talking about her genitals while my boys are still awake.
I'm not talking... Boy.
Thank you very much.
I'm not talking...
All right, let's get Vernon Dozier on the phone here. You want to take a walk?
I got to walk this off. Where are the cigars?
In the bathroom.
I'm going to have a white owl and walk it off.
Walk off what?
I'll walk off the humiliation that I've been visited on her about a fungal.
So my father got the news that the countywide infection, that they'd been able to... What did she say?
They'd been able to contain it to the valley that she grew up in.
But that's not the whole county.
They contained it... All right, coming up next... well, anyway, coming up next. I don't know.
But whatever.
We got a lot of news here. But I want to finish the story about the lady that tells your exes. And then we have a little bit of news about the Colorado Theater gunman. Apparently he smirked in the courtroom and pissed everybody else off. And Quincy Jones has sued the estate of Michael Jackson for $10 million. Boy, I'll tell you, man, sometimes it's just, you know, friends are friends, and all of that stuff is all well and good. But, Jack, you know, there comes a time when you got to do what you got to do. We'll find out about that. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here on this Friday night, and Sunday it's our Game of the Week at Phil TV in HD, so check it out. We'll be right back. Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have Coach Dozier on the line here. We've just gotten done talking about anything to get us off that last topic. Good Lord.
Well, you know something, Phil? You're either an adult about it or you're not.
I understand, but it's a, you know, you're admitting to something that...
What am I... I'm admitting to being young. You know, there was a wonderful song... Because they're young, because they're young. Do, 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 do. I haven't sang for a long time, and I really think that's what this program needs. I really, really do.
Well, it may need singing, but you can't... what does that mean, because they're young?
Because they're young. You know something, Phil? You forget what it was to be young. When you're young, you do crazy things. When I was young, I infected... All right, I infected about a dozen boys with a fungal, and it was countywide. But you see, I can see the looks on your faces right now. You really think you're smartasses, don't you?
Margaret, we're looking at you with shock. I mean...
Oh, with shock. Are you jealous that I was young once?
Well, I was young once, too. I mean, I but the fact that countywide...
It was a dozen boys. Don't you for a minute think that I was... If you... I can tell you this much, Phil. I don't care what you say. If any of you think I was some kind of a slut, I'm going to quote Daniel Day-Lewis, and I'm only half kidding. Well,
I'll come to you where you sleep at night and I'll slit your throat, that line from There Will Be Blood?
Something like that, yes.
God, you ought to tell Mr. Hall about that.
That's a horrible thing to say, Margaret.
Well, then why don't you guys back off?
Margaret, you're talking about having a county-wide fungal.
A county-wide fungal? What does that mean?
What he's trying to... What you said. All right, let me get on the line here. Vernon Dozier, he is a head football coach at Belmar Academy, also their social sciences teacher, their senior class advisor, longtime member of their board. Vernon, how are you?
Hey, Phil, I've got something to discuss tonight because I was put in mind of it when Margaret was talking about her problems. But more to the point, when you said Facebook and what Facebook has meant to, you can talk all you want, Margaret, about fungal infections or STDs or gonorrhea or syphilis or even a topic that you have become very, very fond of, Mr. Henry, for some reason, which is neurosyphilitic insanity.
What do you mean fond of? I've seen it in the news a lot.
Well, you've seen it in the news a lot. You're talking about this actor that apparently was a friend of John Wilkes Booth, Mr. McCullough. See, some of us come from the South, and I don't think John Wilkes Booth was any great bargain. Believe me when I tell you, I don't appreciate... He was an assassin. He murdered the American president, President Lincoln, and he got what he deserved. But he was talking about doing it on behalf of the people of the South, and I'm offended by that. And I'm also offended by the people that he had held company with, and one of them was a man by the name of John McCullough, who was an actor, and he went mad on a stage in Chicago one night because he couldn't keep the syphilis from going up into his head. So,
who was this again?
This guy, John McCullough, was an actor that was tight with John Wilkes Booth. These guys, all the actors in those days, just like they do today, they ran together. And this guy, McCullough, was so infected with syphilis. And he was on stage, I guess. He was doing a play in Chicago, and he just went... He turned into a raving lunatic in front of all the people in the audience and ran raving and mad off stage into the wings of the theater and disappeared for days at a time.
Well, in those days, there was no way of treating this horrible disease. It's just it was a scourge, an absolute scourge. People don't know that before we had penicillin, people who'd been infected with this disease, with these different diseases, there was very little they could do to treat them. I mean, they had some treatments, but if it got out of control, yeah, it affected the brain.
Let me tell you something, Phil, that today, in my opinion, is, and I don't want to be overly dramatic, but could be very much as much an epidemic, I think, as any neuro-syphilitic insanity that you want to talk about, and that is, and I said I don't want to be overly dramatic, but that's this. This not so much Facebook, because I understand Facebook. I understand young people, and they want to have that kind of communication, and that's fine. But what I resent more than anything else are these Facebook, what they call these apps. Now, these are...
What is it again, Coach? An app?
An app.
Yeah, APP, application, or app for Apple, if you will.
Well, yeah, and wouldn't Apple like you to think that way? That's the part that I find so offensive and something that makes me very physically it makes me physically not ill, but it makes me want to get up and hurt something or someone. I can't describe it, but
You know, Coach, you're getting into some areas here that are kind of like freaky. So can we get to the point?
They're freaky. Okay, we'll get to the point.
Well, you know, you want to get up and hurt somebody. Tell me what it is you're thinking.
Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I want to say. A couple of the kids in my class said, "Hey, Mr. Dozier, have you tried Candy Crush Saga? I don't know if you're familiar with it or not."
Yeah, I am.
You know this game?
Yeah.
It's a game on Facebook. And two of the girls in my class, one of them is, well, I'll give their first name, of Belinda and Mason. Both these girls said, "Mr. Dozier, have you tried Candy Crush Saga?" I said, "No, I'm not." They said, "You got to try Candy Crush Saga." And I was on Facebook one night, and I got an invite from both of these girls to do, you know, the Candy Crush Saga. And I went over, can do what you want, Zuckerberg. And you can do what you want with your money. And if you want, it's a free country, and you want to mess with me, and you want to mess with my mind, and mess with what's left of my sanity. When I get home after teaching classes, young people, and teaching football, and you want to mess with what's left of my mind when I get home, I suppose that's your right. Now, I want to tell you this. I play this Candy Crush Saga, whatever they call it, and there's no way in hell that you can win at this game. There's no way.
Well, now, get what is the point?
What's the point of what?
What's the point of the game?
Well, you've played it, Mr. Henry.
I understand, but we should hear from you so we know what the frustration is.
The point of the game is to get all the candy, and you got to make it all go down and get crushed. I don't know, but it's got a crush at the end, and then it says sugar crush, and you win, and you are mercifully released from this, and you can move on. But what never happens. You don't move on, and you don't get to move on. Now, the part that really I find offensive, and I find this as offensive as any racial slur. This is as offensive as calling someone the N-word when at the end of this Candy Crush Saga, which is exactly what it should be called, not Candy Crush Saga, they should emphasize what a baby of a game it is. Is it says now you can buy, now this is the part that really, really makes me want to get up and hurt an innocent human being. And I'm sorry to say it, Phil. I know you don't want me to talk that way. But when it says you can buy a booster, and right there I clicked on it, and it says that'll cost you 99 cents. It's almost as if they're saying, hey, Dozier, boy, are you stupid. Hey, stupid. And so I said to Belinda the next morning, I said, that game, that Candy Crush Saga, I said, that is a game for mindless half-wit scum, I said, and she gets offended, goes and tells her parents, and I didn't mean her. I didn't mean her. Okay.
Now I want to ask you something.
I'm not done.
All right. Well, when we get back, because we got a lot of time here.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Margaret.
Coach, I'm sorry. I want my question is this. When you said it was a game for mindless scum and you didn't mean her, what does that mean?
What it meant was, she's a teenage punk kid. I say that and I hope she's not listening, but, you know, we're among adults here, all right? And I love my students, believe me, but she's a punk kid, and she goes home and she fools around on Facebook. That's what kids do. I'm an adult. I'm an adult man. I'm grown up. I got a wife. I pay a mortgage. I'm a man, and I deserve the respect. I deserve the respect of a man.
What is wrong, Coach?
What is wrong? What's wrong is that I'm playing a candy cane. The candy is going to go down. I can't make the candy crush, okay? So now it says, do you want a booster? Yeah, I would like a booster, and it says that'll be $1.99. And it treats me like I'm the town. In other words, Facebook is treating grown adults like they are the town alcoholic laying in mud that you step over on your way into the saloon. That's what I am. That's what I am on the streets of Facebook. And that's what I resent more than anything else.
Are you sure you're not being a little overly dramatic here?
I don't think so. I know kind of what a coach is saying.
All right, well, hey, Coach, hold on, man. I mean, I'm not trying to infer that what you're saying is frivolous or that you are making a big deal out of nothing. I'm just, it sounds to me like he's going to have a heart attack.
Well, his blood pressure does sound like it's up.
Yeah, it's up. Coach Vernon Dozier talking about Facebook and the apps. They have these games. You can play these. Yeah, I play that Candy Crush Saga.
Is that about as bad as he says?
Well, I can see how it would drive you nuts. I can see how it would drive you nuts because it is a game that, it's not easily played, and they've got a million freaking levels, man. So the minute you beat one level, you're on to another level, and like I'm at level 35. Well, there's over 100. As far as I know, there's over 100 levels.
There's more than that.
There's more than that? Okay, then there's more than that. So I don't know how far you got to go and how much you got to play to win this stinking thing, man. All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Be back with Coach Dozier as we continue his discussion here of Facebook and the apps that they make you pay for. And other news here on this Friday night, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and I just wanted to give you a heads up. In San Francisco, the end of January, I'll be a part of the San Francisco Sketch Fest, and we'll give you the exact dates. It will be a rollout of our one-man show, so I'm very, very excited about being up in the Bay Area in front of the comedy and theater fans and everybody up there. That's the San Francisco Sketch Fest at the end of January. Also, I'll be a guest narrator on Drunk History on Comedy Channel, and again, we'll give you the dates on that.
That's going to be fantastic. Are you going to throw up and everything?
They're not going to make you throw up, are they?
No, they're not. I saw a couple of them. I think they were the early ones on YouTube where the guy was puking. No, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fantastic. You sit back, you have a couple of pops, and you tell a favorite story from history while actors and so on and so forth act it out using your words. So,
I see. So you're having a few drinks and they have to use your drunken slurring words, is that it?
Not my drunken slurring words.
Mr. Henry, he knows how to hold his liquor, not like a lot of people.
Yeah, right. What's your favorite drink?
You know it happens to be Don Julio Blanco.
Good luck.
Margaret, I don't get that hammered on that stuff. Folks, be forewarned. We will have that for you, the dates and all that stuff, when it happens. Drunk History on Comedy Central. Nice people, and anything that celebrates history, I'm all for it, man. I'm telling you. All right, Vernon Dozier on the line with us here. Coach, you approve of that, don't you?
I do approve of that, Phil. I'm a social sciences teacher. We are, we're very much into contemporary history in our classroom.
All right, now getting back to your experience with this game, Candy Crush Saga, on Facebook. So now you have confronted these two students, that asked you to play this game. And you've told them that it's basically a torturous and a sadistic game. And they've now reported you to their parents.
That is correct, yeah.
What happened?
What happened was this. I got a call from this Belinda's father, a guy named... a guy by the name of Fred, or not Fred, I'm sorry. His name was William, and he, or Bill, and he calls me up, and he presumes to tell me, says to me, why are you talking to my daughter about being a blithering idiot? I said, I didn't call your daughter a blithering idiot. I said, any adult that plays Candy Crush Saga is a soulless, mindless animal. And he says to me, don't you play it. And I said, you're cute, but I'm cuter. I said, yeah, I do, because my student asked me to. And he said, what's that all about? And I said, if you think I'm a soulless animal...
All right, what is this about? Is it about the adult?
No, Phil, it's about the game. I'm having to deal with an adult. I'm having to talk to this Belinda's dad, and I'm trying to tell him. I said, you've got to listen to me. I said, you've got to listen to me. I said, this Candy Crush Saga is only played by soulless animals, by a mind, soulless half-wits.
Coach Dozier, are you all right?
I'm fine. I just wish... Are you people listening to me?
Yes.
Okay. I said to him, I said, you need to understand, sir, and I won't give his last name. I said, Belinda's a great kid. She's one of my best students. And I said, Belinda had said to me, hey, Coach, Mr. Dozier, would you like to play Candy Crush Saga? And I said, yeah, I would, and I said, as long as we keep this, professional, and because I don't know if this if she's coming on to me. You know, she these are my senior girls, and she's talking to me about something called Candy Crush, and that's why I told her, you know, her father. And
oh, come on, will you, Coach? Are you serious?
About what?
About her coming on to you, because you.
Hey, look, pal, are you a high school teacher?
No.
Well, then you don't know what I know. But I said to the father, I said, if you think this is one of those deals where, you know, your daughter was coming on, I said, no, she was not. I said, but even if she was, I know how to deal with that. And he said, why are you even bringing that up? And I said, I want to lay my cards on the table before I tell you about this Candy Crush saga. I said, you've got to listen to me. Now, what happened was, and where I got into the trouble with him, is I grabbed both lapels of his jacket, and I shouldn't have done that. But he was starting to walk away from me. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but, oh boy, when a man turns to walk away from me, you don't do that. You never do that to Vernon Dozier. And I said to him, now you look at me, you look at me right in the eye. You turn and walk away from me, man, that's no good. And he started to turn and walk away from me. I said, boy, he's really asking for it. So I grabbed his lapels of his jacket and I swung him back around facing me. I said, now you've got to listen to me because I don't know how much time we've got.
Well, what is this all of a sudden? Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Look, I want to ask a question if I could.
I'm not done yet, okay? What's that supposed to mean, Henry?
You got to listen to me before it's too late. What are we talking about?
We're talking about, yes, a threat. A threat to the mind. I played that Candy Crush saga until I couldn't move, until I couldn't see. I'm trying to get candy, and I tried, and I tried, and I tried, and I tried. I tried to get the candy to drop down the way it's supposed to, so it would say that you can move on to another level, and I didn't. And I tried, and I tried. I couldn't do it. The next day, I talked to this kid, and I said, what are you doing? And she goes, gee, Mr. Dozier, she's got that punk kid look, you know, where they always go, gee, and they roll their eyeballs. Boy, when a kid rolls her eyes at me, man, I'm ready to. There isn't a building that's ever been constructed that will be left standing when I get done taking it apart with my bare hands.
Thank you very much, Coach Dozier.
What a maniac.
And he didn't even finish his story.
That is what it's about.
Well, obviously, he hates Candy Crush Saga, and you got to listen to me. See, that's why I said Invasion of the Body Snatchers, because, you know, at the end of that movie, you know, the guy's running down the freeway. You ever seen it?
But I didn't see the one you talking about, the other one, though. Yeah, the other one is Donald Sutherland going, ha ha.
That is not the original. The original... Well, what is the original? The original, he's running down the freeway.
Well, yeah, but that's not the end of the movie. The original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, yeah, he runs down the freeway saying, you gotta watch out, because they're here. And then he winds up in the hospital, and the doctor is talking to him. In the one with Donald Sutherland, he becomes one of the pod people,
Yeah, he rats out the one lady. She's still alive and everything. She didn't even go to sleep. How's that possible?
What do you mean, how's it possible?
How'd she not go to sleep?
Well, maybe there wasn't a pod around, man. You know, you can go to sleep if there isn't a seed pod near you. Maybe she was hiding out someplace. She must have been really smart, because she was the only one left. Anyway.
Yeah, that's the same lady in Alien.
Anyway, so Coach Dozier apparently was playing this Candy Crush saga, and it was flipping his lid, and he couldn't get it to a higher level. And now you can hear the guy. He's ready for a straitjacket.
Well, he's talking about becoming a soulless half-wit. And, Coach, if you're listening, with all due respect, before you started playing Candy Crush Saga, that's how I thought of you. Thank you.
Yay!
Oh, yay.
Oh, how come everyone gets to applaud you but not me?
Well, that's kind of offensive, isn't it? That guy sounded like he was going to pop a blood vessel. There's no question about it. Is that him?
Yeah, Coach. Yeah, hold on.
Hey, Coach, look, I know you're under a lot of pressure.
Why don't you just let me finish, okay?
You don't hang up on me. If you want to stay on the air, don't hang up on me.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm just saying to you that when that thing started asking me for money, because you got it all wrong. I listened to you when I was off. I hung up and I listened to you, you got it wrong.
What did I get wrong?
What you got wrong is what flipped me out wasn't the game. It was asking me for money. Do you understand me, Henry? It was asking me for $1.99 for a booster. Now, that's the part that I got offended by. And that's the part you won't listen to. So that's why I said to this Belinda, to her father, who came in and said, what's this all about with Candy Crush Saga and my daughter, blah, blah, blah. I said, look, William, this is the guy's name. I want to call him Bill, but some of these guys, some of these guys are so, you know, they got the mama.
Some of these guys are so what?
Well, I mean, you can't call a man Bill anymore. You got to call him William. You can't call a man Bob anymore. You got to call him Robert. You can't call a man Jim anymore. You want to know why? Because Mommy, she's the one, man.
Coach, I think you need to lay down.
Oh, well, I'm not done yet, okay? So don't tell me to lay down. I'm not done yet.
Well, you're sounding overwrought.
Am I sounding overwrought? Is it overwrought, Mr. Henry, to be upset with the fact that they're charging me $1.99 so I can buy a booster, so I can get to another level of this dirty, filthy, soulless, half-wits game? Is that bad?
I can tell you that the way you're sounding right now, I agree with Margaret. You sound like you need to relax.
Let me tell you something, man. I'm relaxed as long as I don't have to talk to some guy named William, because Mama said that's what you do. Okay? I'm relaxed so long as I don't have to play Candy Crush Saga and spend $1.99 of money that I sweat blood for. You understand what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I understand that, but you're getting overwrought over a game. You're getting overwrought over... Don't play the game anymore.
Where are you coming from, man? I thought they told me that you... They told me that you'd understand.
I understand, and here's how much I understand. Don't play the game.
I don't want to play the game.
Then why are you playing the game?
Because it got $1.99 of my money, and I want to get to another level, and then I'll quit playing the game. But this game, this Zuckerberg, this is the game he plays. And he has that, apps. And I paid him $1.99 of money that I sweat blood for. My hard-earned money. And now comes this guy, William, who's the father of this girl. Hi, I'm William. Okay, Bill. Oh, no, it's not Bill. It's William. I go, okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to offend your mama.
You know what you need to do?
What?
You need to call back, get his wife on the phone, and tell her what we've been dealing with, and tell her either put him to bed or give him some medicine or something, because he sounds like he needs to be put in a straitjacket.
All right, I'm on it.
Yeah, I'll help him out, too.
When you say you're on it, Bud, would you clean that up a little bit? Because I'm sorry, Phil.
Oh, come on, will you? World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, people are thinking...
No, nobody's thinking anything other than what you're thinking, Margaret, okay? So we'll be back here with, a little bit from the final 15 minutes of our show, final segment of our show, try to bring it back to the planet Earth, the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
What is this?
This is the theme from 1984, you know?
Yes. Up there in a long live Big Brother.
Sure. Anyway.
Well, is this a comment on President Obama?
No, it's not a comment on President Obama. I happen to like the song. If I lived in 1980, in the year, well, I did live in the year 1984.
What was that like?
What was what like?
Well, when you lived in 1984, what was it like?
Nothing. It was the same as it is now. There was no...
Yeah, so there wasn't no slave state?
No, there was no slave state.
Well, why would you think there was a slave state?
On account of the book.
Well, Orwell was never really literal when he said 1984. He put it well into the future, and in 1948, 1984 was well into the future. In fact, when I was in high school, 1984 seemed like well into the future, you know.
Well, you were in high school.
In the late 60s. But 1984, I'll never forget the year 1984... that movie came out. I guess somebody at a studio thought, hey, this would be fantastic, you know, 1984? Yeah, well, guess what next year is? 1984? Yeah, let's do it, man. So they released the movie. Another thing that happened in 1984, in fact, in January of 1984, the new Apple computer, the new personal computer, I shouldn't say PC, but the Apple computer came out. And that's when they produced their very famous commercial. And I remember the buildup to that was huge. They were talking about, oh, geez, wait till you see what Apple's got going on, and wait till you see our new commercial for the Super Bowl. It was one of the very first, if not the first, specially produced commercials just for the Super Bowl.
And I remember that too, Phil, because it was a 1984 theme.
Yeah, it was. It was the girl comes running in with the hammer.
No one is that thing on a chain.
That's called a hammer.
That's what they call that in the Olympics, man.
The what?
That's what they call that in the Olympics.
In the Olympic competition, which is the hammer throw, which is a field competition, that's why they say track and field.
Yeah.
Track is when they're running. Field is the high jump and stuff like that. So she throws that thing at the Big Brother screen. So that was Apple's commercial, and that was 1984. And I remember it was the Raiders and Redskins Super Bowl. But other than that, it was, oh, in the Olympics. We had the Olympics in L.A. in 1984. It was a fantastic year. It was a great year, and it was fun, and the Olympics being in Los Angeles was such a ball. I took my father to, we went to boxing, we went to basketball. I'm trying to think of what else we went to. We went to boxing and basketball and track, and we went to one of the distance races, the, I don't know what it was, 1,500 meter in the Coliseum. The weather was great. The crowds were great. It was just a blast. So,
in other words, there wasn't any enslavement.
No, man, there ain't gonna be no enslavement just because a guy wrote a book about it.
There wasn't any enslavement. It was, it was what it was, and it was a great year. No, when Orwell wrote 1984, he was simply trying to say well into the future, you know. And what he did was he reversed the numbers. He wrote it in 48, so he reversed it, made it 1984, but now it's kind of like 1999. That was another year that everybody was, oh wow, you know, we really are a funny species. We love to think of ourselves as sophisticated, but we are, at our very roots, we're still kind of just a superstitious breed of primates, swinging from the vines and getting all freaked out when weird things happen.
Well, Phil, that's very demeaning.
Well, it may be demeaning. It's true. It's true.
You think the human race is not that far removed from a bunch of vine-swinging apes.
Absolutely. Because, you know, as I said, we may think of ourselves as very sophisticated and intelligent and, oh, well, you know, we're doing this and we're doing that. But just throw a curveball into the mix. All you got to do is throw in something like, hey, it's 1999. Woo! What's going to happen? Or 1984. Or, you know, there's a weird comet coming. Or there's an earthquake. And we turn into very primitive Stone Age people mentally. We're worried about all kinds of stuff.
Give me an example of that.
No, I think I'm pretty sophisticated.
Well, what are you talking
about? Hold on for a minute. Give you an example of that? I'm telling you that Nostradamus, for the longest time, that jackass, boy, if I never hear his name again, it'll be too soon.
That's the guy that predicted Hitler.
He didn't predict Hitler. Let me tell you about Nostradamus. Just like any other fable or any other person that deals in fables and deals in sort of high-concept poetry, Nostradamus is a guy whose words have been taken by subsequent generations to fit into historic events. Oh, Hister. Is that right?
Well, you can't deny the similarity there, Phil.
First of all, here's the thing I can deny. I can deny that he ever said Hister. I can deny that it has been interpreted that way. I don't know who did the translation, and I don't know whether that translation is accurate or not. And even if it is, I still don't buy that Nostradamus predicted Hitler any more than anybody else. I think he got lucky with a few letters and a couple of consonants. I don't think that guy ever predicted anything. And if you look at his poetry and you look at these so-called quatrains, it's extremely vague. It's got very little to do, if you look at it objectively, it has very little to do with predicting anything. It's simply something that people took and they wanted it to fit into their paranoid, weird vision.
You know, Phil, people like you rob all of the romance out of life.
Yeah, I'm going to say, Miss Fanny, it's a lot of fun of breathing Nostradamus and all those guys.
They mean Nostradamus. It's not a... That's not the guy that plays SC, no.
What an idiot, man, a guy that plays SC.
Bud, you realize...
Bud, Nostradamus is a guy. Notre Dame plays SC.
That's what I'm saying.
No, you didn't, man. You said Nostradamus.
I said, is he the one that plays them?
No, he doesn't play them. He was a guy, man. Notre Dame's a school. They play SC. Is he the one that plays SC?
Well, what did you think, Bud?
I don't know. Ain't that the guy's name?
His name's Nostradamus, and the school is Notre Dame. Get it?
Is it the same thing?
No, it ain't the same thing. Wow. All right, so anyway, folks, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show is engineered out at our nation's capital by our very good, close, personal friend, Matt. Here, I am Phil Hendry, Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, of course, Robert Leonard. All of us, we thank you for joining us on the broadcast here this evening. And don't forget, we have coming up on Sunday our big game of the week, which is always a hoot and a half. Again, don't forget, I'll be at the San Francisco Sketch Fest, the San Francisco Sketch Fest, which is in late January, and of course we'll be appearing on Drunk History on Comedy Central. Have a great weekend. Been a ball of a week hanging with you guys, and we'll see you on Monday on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Get a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com.